Welcome to the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined, as always, by A. Sherrod Blakely. What's up, Sherrod?
What's going on, Kyle Rasheed Draper?
Why you guys got to use my middle
government name? I'm going to call it what you want to call it. It's your government name.
Like, I'm getting in trouble. You know, when mom used to call me a Kyle Rasheed Draper, bring your butt up in here. Hey, we got Chris Forsberg of ESPN hanging out with us. What's up, Chris?
Christopher Warren Forsberg.
Ooh, Christopher Warren.
Hey, guys, we're in the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents. Any size, that's 99 good reasons to switch. So much to get to, fellas. Free agency, not even a full week old yet, but we got so many big names already switching teams. LeBron headed west, Boogie heading to the world champion Golden State Warriors. Sherrod, just are you surprised by anything we've seen this week?
I'm surprised at the amount of action that we've seen in such a short period of time. I mean, it really is unusual, particularly when you talk about the biggest domino of all, you know, LeBron James making his decision as quickly as he did. Now, he said from the very beginning that this was going to be different. The decision 3.0 wasn't going to be like 1 and 2.
Right.
And he was right. I mean, it was quick, it was decisive, and it was very subtle. I mean, rather than having like an over-the-top extravaganza, his agency sent out a little email,
a tweet saying,
hey, oh, by the way, LeBron's going to L.A. for, you know, the terms of his deal. So I like the way it's played out, but there's still a lot of mouths out there that still need to be fed. So so far it's been great.
Chris, you know, the whole LeBron situation is interesting to me is because he didn't really have much to think about. I know he met with Magic Johnson Saturday and everything, but it's clear LeBron had this in mind already before the season, before free agency even began.
Like a year ago,
right,
2 years ago.
Exactly.
I love that he had to go to the decision cave for a decision he probably made, I don't know, again, a year ago to pursue this. I like that it happened quick. Same with Sherrod. Like, let's get this thing moving. Like, that was the big domino that had to go. And now it's the little stuff. And now it's going to be interesting because, all right, when the big domino goes, all the little guys are sitting there like, where's ours? Where's ours? And there's just, you know, like Isaiah Thomas's of the world. Mm-hmm. Or what is going to happen with them? I think there'll be a lot of intrigue at the tail end of free agency here as teams start swooping up some guys because there's going to be some names out there that move or sign deals, and it'll be interesting.
I feel so bad for Isaiah Thomas, man.
I know, man.
I just have this image in my head of him like standing in the middle of the street with a tear rolling down one cheek. Aww. And the Brinks truck just driving
just
away.
Just driving right past, right?
I can't get that image out of my head. I hope somebody pays him. And Orlando, I know that they're one of the teams that's being talked about that may reach out to him and give him their mid-level. And I hope he does get some semblance of a payday because...
But let me throw this at
more
you,
more because
Sherrod.
Of him as a good guy as opposed to a guy who, let's be real,
how
is damaged goods now.
Of this did he bring on himself? I understand the injury, but the way he played in Cleveland, the Cleveland situation, if he would have been the good soldier in Cleveland.
Now, good soldier meaning
keep your mouth shut, dude. Just wait till your payday, because I think Cleveland, their thought was, all right, Isaiah is a guy that we can keep. And then, you know, he comes back, he's back on the floor, he's talking to the media. How much, Chris, do you think that really hurt him? And I know he played in L.A., but it was in L.A., they gave him his shots, and, you know, he was okay. But could he have played the Cleveland situation differently?
What really hurt him was just playing through everything in Boston, right? Like, if he had sort of pulled himself up earlier and just been like, listen, I can't go forward, maybe the hip injury wouldn't have been as big of a deal. Maybe it wouldn't have had that trickle-down effect where the Celtics were so willing to move him. And that's, you know, that's hard to begrudge the player, right? Like, he's out there giving up his body so that the Celtics can succeed. And I don't know, he just put himself in a tough spot then where he had to rehab and then get thrown in midstream in Cleveland. But it's just not in Isaiah Thomas's ilk to sit there not only like putting himself through that, but then getting to Cleveland and as LeBron and others, but mostly LeBron, start pointing fingers, you know, Isaiah's not going to sit there and be quiet.
Be quiet, right.
You know, he's the one who's going to be like, wait, this isn't right. Yeah. And you know, I appreciate that refreshing honesty and the fact that he'll put himself out there like that. But now it's led to this situation where he's left wondering where his next paycheck is going to come from. And that's a tough spot. What's fascinating to me is that a team like the Lakers is going to pay Caldwell Pope, what, $12
million
a year?
And
Isaiah's sitting there thinking, you know, all right, I don't even want the Brinks truck anymore. Can I get whatever, you know, delivery truck that he got with the $12 million?
Right. Like, I'll take that, right?
You know, it's unfair because the level he was at, in his year in that year in Boston was just so absurd, and what he did, I do feel bad for him.
It became personal for Isaiah. He was on a personal mission in Boston and completely took himself out of the business side of this. And because the businessman in him would have said, wait a minute. They could just kind of kick me to the curb.
Right, I'm about
and my
to be
body
a free
is all broke up, and I'm giving all I can to them. They're the ones that are profiting off of what's going on here,
right,
more so than I am, because I'm still the most, you know, the biggest underpaid player in the game at that point when he was in Boston. And so when the season ended and they had a chance to get Kyrie, they did not hesitate.
Right.
It was never personal for them. It was business. We love the narrative that Isaiah gave us as far as this gutsy little guy, the 60th pick overall, you know, lost his sister, played through that, which to me, that's one of those things that I'm never going to forget and always will respect Isaiah for the way he handled that situation better than I think anyone could have possibly handled that. But at the end of the day, it's still a business. And
it's
that he, you know, unfortunately came up on the short end of that.
Yeah, last word on this. It just sucks because now, I don't know if it'll ever come, you know, multi-year deal or whatever, but he has to go out and prove himself again.
All over
again. I mean, he's had
Every single year.
But those 2 years in Boston, those two full seasons in Boston, are some of the greatest in Celtics history in terms of numbers, statistically. And now, it's like he can't get anything. Now he's like a washed up veteran still looking to hang on somewhere, and he's going to have to prove himself once again. And that's like the story of his life, really, just constantly having to prove himself.
Like playing Candyland, and you land a little mudslide, and next thing you know, you all the way back to the beginning. Thinking like, damn. Come on.
Gumdrop Forest again.
Right, you work your way all the way up, and then that's messed up. All right. Hey, we got to
love your IT.
Hey, you know, regarding LeBron and the Lakers,
right,
we knew that was going to happen.
How's that Cleveland team looking right about now?
Yeah, hey, right. But how's that Lakers team looking, though? I mean, look at the misfits he signed.
You know
Lance Stevenson, Rondo.
Here's the thing. If you can't win, be entertaining in how you lose.
It's Hollywood, right?
That team, that is a made-for-TV dramedy right there. Because there's going to be drama, and there's going to be a lot of comedic value that you're going to get out of that team. I mean, at some point, you know LeBron and Lance are going to get into it, and that's going to be comical. And then you're going to have, what, you know, Rondo, the peacekeeper?
The voice of reason right?
There are so many storylines and plots that are going to just kind of develop within that group. And that, to me, that is worth all the money to watch the Lakers play. Because I don't give a damn if they make the playoffs. I just want to see the drama.
Play, right?
Do you think Magic Johnson waited for LeBron to commit before telling him the rest of his plan?
Or I would have. There's no way I would have said, hey, oh, LeBron, before you commit, these are going to be No.
But you don't want to start it off like that.
Drapes,
this is a
that's
guy
the
you're
fine print. We call those players the fine print in the deal.
But you know, Magic and M said, they were determined to make this Lakers roster different than previous rosters
they
that LeBron
sure
did. It wasn't just the Kyle Korvers out there. I'm not sure what the hell is going on. But
it's
you got
to
think LeBron agreed to this. There is no way Magic's bringing in Lance Stevenson without LeBron's blessing.
I think there's two things at play here. They wanted tough guys who would like go out there and be a little bit of muscle and aren't afraid to mix it up and give LeBron a little something maybe that he had. Like, you know, I'm trying to think. Perk is like the enforcer up there. Like, I mean, what did he have for guys that were willing to kind of go to war for him?
Yeah.
And I think they needed playoff experience a little bit. And so maybe Stevenson, he's been in it a few times. Certainly Rondo having won a title and all that.
Playoff Rondo.
I mean, otherwise that roster is pretty young. And so I think they needed moves like that. I don't know why they needed on July 1 to go make all those moves. Like, I know who Caldwell Pope's agent is. And so that makes sense why he got signed. But still, it seems a little odd that they were so quick to go get those guys.
If you can't beat them, beat them up.
Beat them up, right?
Beat them up.
Exactly. But you know, the thing about the – at least, you know, for their sake, those are one-year deals. They'll be, you know, max space. Right. You know, they could go out and sign a Kawhi Leonard next year. And clearly, that's Magic's plan. Speaking of Kawhi, Chris, what do you think about the reports out there that – the number five, the top five guys on the Celtics roster, off limits regarding a Kawhi Leonard trade?
I think it's absolutely true because you don't put your best offer on the table immediately. You know, if you're the Celtics, you know you have all these assets. You know, why is Danny Ainge going to say, oh, yeah, we'd definitely be willing to throw Jaylen Brown in there? No, what you do is you say, listen, we really like our core. we're a little hesitant to move these guys and like really don't want to give up these picks either, but we understand we got to give something to get something. So we're willing to move some of these picks. And, you know, if it takes Terry Rozier and Marcus Morris and whatever combination of guys to make the salary work, we're willing to do that deal. And I'm sort of surprised sit there and say, all right, well, you know, that's an attractive offer, but we got to think about it. And the last thing I bet Danny Ainge says is, but before you do anything, just give me a call.
Right.
Because if the Spurs call back and say, listen, all right, we can do this deal, but we really need Jaylen Brown in there. I think Jaylen Brown is a phenomenal player. After the jump he made from year one to year two, I'm super intrigued to see where he goes moving forward. I think that ceiling that we maybe perceived is higher than we thought. But if that's the cost of doing business, we all freaked out when they traded Isaiah and Jay Crowder and the Brooklyn pick to get Kyrie. And then, like, within weeks, we were like, oh, okay.
That makes sense.
And so I think there could be something similar at play here. It would be quite the pain point to have to move something like Jaylen Brown. But if that's one of the five guys you have to give up to do it, you know, then I think Danny Ainge has to seriously consider it.
The one difference this time around is that with Kyrie Irving, you were getting a known commodity. You knew that he was going to be healthy enough to step out on the floor and do Kyrie Irving type things. There's still some uncertainty as to whether Kawhi is going to come back from that quad injury and be that dominant two-way player that we all agree is a, you know, at worst. And I think he's a top five player, but at worst, he's in the top 10. That is why if you're Danny Ainge, even though you're never going to put your best offer out there initially, you're going to put less than your usual bad offer out there initially, because you've got so many questions about him. And the point that Chris made about Jaylen Brown's ceiling being a little bit higher, I think it's even higher in Danny's eyes, because the things that Jaylen Brown is capable of doing, knowing that he's still so young, that he's still a guy that, you know, puts in the work to get better, that makes you all the more hesitant to frankly get in bed with a guy whose health is an issue, whose contract beyond this year is an issue, and frankly, whose mindset and just willingness to embrace what you're about is all in question. Because I think we all agree San Antonio is one of the model organizations. Yeah. And for him to have a disconnect of the magnitude that clearly exists, you gotta think long and hard about giving up a guy, or including a guy that you know has tremendous upside and potential and is so young and is still on that damn rookie contract.
You talk about that rookie contract, Sharad, but eventually that rookie contract is going to turn into a second, and you're going to have to pay.
Yep.
And so when you look at the Celtics roster, you're keeping Kyrie. Let's say you want to keep Kyrie.
Okay.
You got him locked up, massive contract. Tatum's going to be coming up.
You're going to take care of him.
What are you going to do with Al Horford? Are you going to extend him at, what, $20 million or whatever it is? What about Gordon Hayward's $30 million? And so, you know, when I'm looking at the contracts that's going to be handed out here over the next couple of years, and are you talking about getting Jimmy Butler or Anthony Davis or whoever? Jaylen, to me, seems to be the one guy that could be on the outside looking in. Like, when it comes time for contracts to be handed out, and he gets a big-time offer somewhere else, like, he's not going to be taking no qualifying offer. Hopefully, you maybe get an extension done with him or something like that, and don't let him actually hit free agency. But somebody, if he does hit any kind of free agency, he could be the guy that gets a major offer somewhere else.
That's why, if you're the Celtics, you got to win now. Yeah. You got to win now, because that has the ability to change the mindset of guys who are coming up on contracts. I mean, you look at a guy like Klay Thompson, for example. He took that extension, and at the time, I'm thinking, like, Klay, you sure you want to do this? Because that extension, while certainly a bump from his rookie contract, he was worth way more than that, and we knew that at the time. And he didn't have the same kind of issues and concerns that Steph had with the ankle and stuff. Yeah. So that, to me, is what the Celtics, that to me is the only way they can keep the overwhelming majority of this core together, is they've got to win, they've got to get to the finals, and they've got to either win it all or at least put up a significant fight where some of these young guys are thinking, man, if we just come back together one more year, maybe we can do this. And if I maybe have to take, instead of getting near max money of $20-25 million a year, if maybe they take care of me and give me like 3 years, 50 or something like that, maybe then we can win a title. I'll still be young enough to hit the free agent market and get the payday that I want. Those are the kind of things that Danny Ainge has got. I mean, they got to roll the dice and hope that, you know, that they 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven. They need some 7-Eleven luck.
What do you think, Chris?
What I think is most fascinating is that what an embarrassing position the Celtics are in terms of embarrassment of riches, where you can sit here and say, well, you don't necessarily need to go get Kawhi Leonard in order to compete. And, like, we can talk about keeping this core together right now and them having the more than enough to compete in the East and get to the finals, or you can gloat up and maybe have enough to compete with like someone like the Warriors, which seems far-fetched, but it's still a possibility. I think it all comes down to what Danny Ainge perceives as the window. Mm-hmm. Do you have to win right now in order to have that best chance of keeping this core together and building it out? Or do you need to play the long game and say, you know, listen, we're good right now. We're going to get to the finals. We're going to get these young guys experience. But our window right now is 3 to 5 years out when Tatum is a top five guy in the league, when Jaylen Brown could be one of the top 20, 30 guys in the league. You know, it's an interesting and tough decision to walk, because I think, you know, if you plan too far out and then things happen, you know, all of a sudden, did you miss your window? You know, it's a lot of risk there. I think it's a tough decision for Danny Ainge, whether you go all in. Like, what is the all in point? Because getting someone like Kawhi is going to take that. Because then, as you were saying, Drapes, the cap is going to just explode eventually because you get all these guys on big contracts. When are you ready to just push all in on what you got?
I think all in is now, because you have the potential to have like damn near half of your lineup for agents next summer. Yeah. I mean, if Al decides to opt out, you know, he'll be around. You know, obviously Kyrie, Baines, you know, he's going to, he could be opt out.
Marcus Smart situation.
You got Morris Baines, is up. Morris. They got to win now. They have to win at a high level right now, because there's so much uncertainty with your roster going forward after this season.
Do they have the roster to do that right now?
They can get
can
out of
they
the,
stand pat? Can, they can get out of these. We know that.
Yes, we all agree on that. Can they hold their own with Golden State? They're going to need some breaks. They're going to need some breaks that have nothing to do with Danny plotting this. They're going to need guys that, like, you know, wake up some morning, you know, reaching for the ice cube, and all of a sudden,
right. pull something in the back.
They're just going to need fluky things that have nothing to do with anything they do in order to really have the best shot at getting past Golden State. Because straight-up talent can't do it.
This is the hard part about not getting to the finals this year is we don't know what the gap is.
Right.
You know, if we could have just got a glimpse, then I think Danny Ainge has an easier decision here. Okay, is it, you know, we're close. Let's go get Kawhi, and we can challenge that team.
Right.
But right now you're left thinking, man, they wiped LeBron and his team out real quick, so much so that LeBron, even if he was already figuring on going to L.A., was like, definitely not going back there. I can't run this back with this team. So, you know, you're left wondering. And we saw it a year ago. They just knew. They weren't on the same level as the Cavs at that point. And so they had to make that deal for Kyrie and change the roster and only bring back four guys. I don't see anything that grand happening anytime soon. But like you said, there's a lot of uncertainty a year from now about how it's all going to play out. I wish we knew what that gap was, because then it would be a lot easier to say, do this or do that. But right now, it's just, you just got to kind of look at the league and think, you know, all right, we think we're right there.
We don't really know.
But we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And you talk about next year. I don't know about Kyrie. I think he's going to be back here after this season. I think he wants to be. But Kyrie's a different cat. He's a different dude. You're hearing the reports, you know, he may want to go to New York. He may want to team up with Jimmy Butler, Sherrod. If you're Danny Ainge, are you banking definitely on Kyrie being on this roster in 2019?
You don't bank on anything.
Are you concerned, though?
Yeah, if my concern level isn't as high, I think, as a lot of people on the outside. Because, again, the point that you make about Kyrie's being a different kind of dude, absolutely. I mean, even if he was all in on coming back, he still wouldn't let you know that he's all in on coming back. That's just how he rolls. If I'm Danny Ainge, the only thing you can do is put him in an environment and a situation where he can win and he can be showcased as the face of the franchise. And that's exactly what they've done. I think Kyrie is very comfortable in Boston. I think he likes the fact that he can just kind of disappear, really, which is weird for an athlete of his prominence who can just kind of disappear in the bushes around here. At the end of the day, he's got to do what makes sense for him basketball-wise. It's not going to be about money. It's not going to be about years or anything like that, because he's going to get whatever the max is allowed.
Yeah.
It's about what does he really want. To me, in some ways, it's similar to LeBron from the standpoint of we don't necessarily know what he's looking for. After this, I mean, if it's about winning culture and winning situation, then he doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
But if there's some other things he's looking to get involved with, then he's going to have a wandering eye. And as far as like the marketing and all that stuff, I don't see any benefit of being in New York versus Boston, because whether you are superstar getting endorsement deals in Boston or superstar getting endorsement deals in New York, the money's still the same. So the prestige is still the same. So I don't think that's going to come into play. As far as wanting to be closer to home, I'm not buying that.
It's close enough.
It's not like you in like a third world country and you get to come home like twice a year. You're literally a short plane ride away from Jersey.
And didn't this whole summer kind of confirm to him that you can be this big celebrity and movie star, and you can still go to LA in the off season, you can go to New York in the off season. It's not like, you know, being in Boston is prohibiting him from doing the things he wants to do. The one thing I do think the Celtics are going to have a hard time with is just what you said, Sherrod. What makes Kyrie tick?
Right.
You know, all we've ever heard is when he came to Boston, I think Jackie McMullen wrote this story where it's like, what is Kyrie after?
Yeah.
Like, what is he looking for? And all he'll ever really say is, I want to do something that's bigger than myself. And I, you know, you can interpret that in any different way.
Which is exactly what he wants.
Right. Exactly.
Pick your narrative.
He doesn't want you to know, I don't think, what moves him. But I do think winning is important. I think having a say in what your organization is doing is important to him. I think he really appreciates the transparency he has with Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge. So that's why I go back to it when people say, like, oh, you think Kyrie might bolt next year? No, because I think this checks a lot of the boxes for him. But yet, he's a wild card, so you just don't know what necessarily is going to happen. I do like this, too, that the Celtics have approached this. You know, we've asked, I think, Brad a couple times, like, you know, what do you think about the whole, like, how would you sell Kyrie on staying here? And he's just like, I don't try to sell anybody on anything. People can do whatever they want after the season, but I feel pretty good about our situation. And why wouldn't you? You got this new training facility. You've got, like, all this great roster.
A path to the finals is there.
Right, and that's the challenge for anyone outside of Boston. How are you going to convince him to leave? I know, just in talking with sources within the Knicks organization, I mean, they're definitely gearing up to make a run at him. There's no doubt about that. They don't feel confident because they're thinking the same thing that a lot of us are thinking, that you need to have a winning type culture that he can be a part of. And so for them, you know, they're trying to obviously win as many games this year as possible to show him that they're turning the corner. Now, will that be enough? They're not all that confident that that's going to be enough. They said, but we're damn sure going to try to put our two cents in and make a run at him, which they should.
Yeah. All right, guys. I want to switch gears to a new member of the Celtics, Robert Williams.
Your boy.
Everybody. He's about to tip off Summer League Friday in Vegas. We'll have that game at 7:30 on
Can't
NBC
wait.
Sports Boston. What's going on with your boy, Sherrod? I mean, that's your boy, bro. I mean, what?
Listen.
Missed the conference call, missed the flight.
The conference call. call. Wake up. The conference call didn't bother me that much just because it was, you know, it was more than, well, actually, it was like a week after the draft. So that's a lot of time to get your body right. It didn't bother me as much as the missed flight, only because the missed flight was business. I mean, the conference call, that was more of a courtesy to the media.
And I
get how that happened, but when you have that conference call on a Friday and your first practice is Sunday, you do community service stuff on Friday, so you didn't get back to home until like late Friday night. So we're talking about basically a 36-hour window that you decided you needed to go back home and get back to practice for. It's not all that shocking that you missed your flight. The decision to go back home, that was the first problem. The second problem, the decision to go back home. Because if you don't make that decision, I don't understand.
Everything else is good. Yeah, yeah.
What could he have possibly forgotten that would cause you to take? Well, we assume.
You know what?
We assume.
I'm not going to speculate too much, but yeah.
I mean, it is a little odd to me that he, knowing what he had already kind of been through and that we're already kind of making a big deal about the conference call, that he would even put himself in a position where he could potentially miss getting back. And now, listen, it's on the player. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't have been back by that Sunday practice. And now he's got the hard part is I sit here and I want to like condemn him and say like, you know, that's unacceptable. And, you know, you got Celtics fans who are like, you know,
cut bait.
I'm telling you, you should see
fans
my mentions
are that already. Wow.
I mean, even today when he signed the contract, people are like, did he forget the pen? And like, you know, I mean, people are ruthless on this kid already.
Right.
And yet, on Friday night when he like throws down a dunk does anything, we're all going to sit there and say all is forgiven. Like, the Celtics don't have a player like this. I guess the other thing is you're not counting on him to be an impact guy this year. Right, it would be great if he could find a role and carve out some time and make an impact because of his athleticism. But I think we all understand the roster is loaded. He's probably more of a project who's going to have to develop here and find his way with this team and start stretching out his range, doing all the things that Brad Stevens loves. So maybe that gives him a little buffer to grow. But yeah, he's a little digging a hole. He's got to climb himself out of there.
I know you're not panicking, Chris, or overreacting, but has there been any signs or any reason for you to believe that he will turn this around and get it together in terms of the maturity? You know, everybody said Boston's the perfect fit for him.
The
veterans on the roster, Al
on
Horford,
paper, it's
on
the perfect
paper.
Place.
He Al's been in town. It's not like Al Horford's not around.
And Al gets in that gym early.
Exactly. Early. Al's there. And so if I'm the young fella, and we've seen, you know, in the past with KG, young guys, you know, if they're smart, you attach yourself to players like that. If Robert is smart, he attaches himself to Al Horford.
Right. But it ultimately comes down to Robert, because Al's not the type, unlike KG, who would like go grab or the Patrick Bryan or whatever, who wouldn't listen and kind of like shook him and been like, come on, man, what are you doing? Al's just the type who's going to be like, here's what I do. My routine starts at 7 a.m. You need to be in here. Here's how we're going to eat. Here's how we're going to get better. It's still on the player to go out there and do that. Now, I fully expect the Celtics will put the best support system around him as possible. You know, give him every opportunity to reach his potential. But I love that their message to him has been, you know, listen, this is on you. It's all about, there's a lot of people who have the potential to be good or to be great, whatever you want to call it. And they got to put in the work. And so, you know, listen, maybe these missteps, I'll buy the notion that maybe having something like this at the start of your career is a nice little way to make sure it doesn't happen further out. Like, he's got to be laser focused during this moving forward. If he misses one thing in Vegas, he will be crucified.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, maybe that makes him buy in all that more. So can he turn a negative into a positive? That's on Robert Williams
to figure
out. He's
going to get an opportunity, that's for sure. And the thing about Al, you know, just kind of piggybacking off of that, Al is such an early starter in his workouts as far as the beginning of the day. And I remember Robert was talking about that, and all I could think of, that's what you're supposed to do. Right. If you know the guy that you're supposed to be, like, modeling yourself after, you know he gets in at 7 a.m., guess what? You should be there 6:45.
6:45 early.
You should be there 6:30. You should follow the example that he's setting, because, Al, there's a reason why. Al has been in the league for all these years, and there's a reason why every team Al's played for has gone to the playoffs, even them crappy teams he played for when he got to Atlanta.
Why would you want to leave that practice facility?
Why would you? If I'm a young guy and I had the reputation that he had, and I got a guy like Al Horford and his body of work who wants to basically mentor me, I am going to be like that dude on his ankle, holding on for dear life, going wherever he goes, because I know if I'm going to be in this game, if I'm going to ever have a chance to have a career even halfway as good as his, I got to stay in his shadow. I got to be Al Horford's shadow.
And we'll know, because we've seen it. Was it J.R. Giddens who was eating the Skittles, and Ray Allen would tell him, like, come on, man, you got to kick that candy.
Right.
And J.R. Giddens didn't stick around in the league because he didn't listen. He didn't develop that routine. He didn't commit himself. We'll know pretty early here if Robert Williams is going to commit himself and whether he'll follow that lead of Al Horford.
Yeah, this league has a way of weeding out those guys that don't put in the work. No
Pascal Bryant, I'm glad you brought him up.
Yep. Haven't heard from him since, have we?
He sucked.
All right. Chris Forsberg of ESPN, thanks so much for joining us on the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you guys go out there and subscribe to Anything is Potable, our podcast on the 2008 Celtics. It's coming up this summer. It's going to be great. Scal's a part of it. We got interviews with all the great members of that 2008 Celtics championship team. And you can also subscribe to this Celtics Talk podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. For Chris Forsberg, A. Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time.
We out!